Good evening, everybody, and welcome to the Metaphysical Hour. Tonight is March 30th, 2018. I'm Julia Cannon, and oh my goodness, are we having a great time tonight? If you didn't know that we're in a tumultuous time, you will know it now. We're going to tell you all about it. It's just... That's the reason we're on a little bit late. Mom used to call it gremlins. I think we'll just call it, I was thinking of things, of ways to introduce this. Mama told me there'd be days like this. It was like, oh my. I think we have a combination of, I was thinking, well, we have Mercury retrograde. We have, what was I saying right before it? I said, we had all these things happening right here now. It's like, oh my gosh. It's like, it's probably all of that just all rolled into one, bundled up. And, we were just having a lot of problems. And poor Don, bless his heart. He said the another station was acting up too. And I can only imagine how he probably doesn't have much hair left.
It might be that, satellite and that great big Chinese thing that's, falling in, all these, things happening in our atmosphere, messing with our internet.
I bet you're right. That's probably it. Craziness. It was just everything. I mean, we're just over here, just no sound, no, first we couldn't get video. Or sound. Then we got the video, but then the sound. And so but we figured it out. We figured a way around it. So yay, we're here finally. Okay. So a few quick announcements and then we'll bring you on. And, you're here, but we'll officially bring you on, Chase. And we'll be here. Okay. I've been announcing our classes that we have coming on and our conference that's just around the corner now. Yeah. Okay. We have our QHHT classes, our quantum healing hypnosis technique classes that are coming up that are all around the conference. The level three, it's full, and the level one companion class is April. It's April 9th to the 11th. And then the level two class is April 16th to the 19th. And there is still some room in those, but come on, they're filling up. So get in them now. And then they're wonderful because if you want to be in them and also go to the conference, they're great because they're sitting on either side of the conference. You could go to that and then go to the conference. So come on, it's a great deal. Just come on to it. And then, like I said, right in the middle of it is the UFO conference. And this is... all of this is in Eureka Springs, Arkansas. And this conference is the second longest continuously running conference in the United States. It might be in the world. Is it in the world? You would know, Chase, don't you? You probably would know.
I don't know. but I would put money that it was.
All right. I'm thinking, it may very well be. I mean, will anybody dispute us if we say this? It is definitely in the U.S. and it could very well be in the world. So, and that's the trigger word is the continuously running. So, and this is our 31st year. So, I mean, that's a big deal. Yeah. So it's gone through, it's been going and going. And the thing is it's gone through a few hands, but I mean, it has to when you keep going that long, but we're going to keep it going. So let's just keep it on. It's in beautiful, like I said, beautiful Eureka Springs, Arkansas. And if you've not been there, come on. If you have any interest in this subject matter, and it goes beyond just UFOs, it's the paranormal, as you'll see, our subject matter tonight it kind of goes off into the little bit different. I mean, they skirt these edges. I mean, these are all starting to blend now. So it just, it's really interesting. So, but what's wonderful is this is where you can come and be with like-minded people who are all different like you and me. We're all just strange, you know? So, but we look normal, right? Anyway, okay, so that's April 13th to the 15th. There's information on our website at Ozark UFO Conference. And here at the BBS station, you can get information that on there too, the website there, as well as on the Ozark MT website. We have information in a lot of different places. You can get on mine, Julia Cannon. You can probably get information there too. You can get it anywhere. So I talk with my hands. Okay, I'm going to get you on, Chase, and you can take over. So, all right. So, you know what? I went to your website, and this is so cool. I want you guys to hear what Chase has on her website. She has "Welcome to my site," and then she has, you know, she describes herself: a ufologist, author, radio talk show host, investigator, researcher of UFOs, paranormal activity, strange creatures, conspiracy, and ancient civilizations. Now that's cool. Who wouldn't like to have that on their resume? Really, and on their website? Me, I want that. I got a couple of things, but I want that.
Aw. It's
that is cool.
Thank you. It's a lot of fun.
Welcome, Chase. Thank you for being here and welcome. And Chase is one of our speakers at the UFO conference this year. And your subject matter is so cool. you'll be speaking on the new evidence on the elongated skulls of Peru. I mean, cool.
Yeah, and this has been years and years of investigation and research and a lot of travel, a lot of time in Peru and Bolivia. And we're really excited because we're looking for a hybrid race. We're looking for the evidence, whether that comes from the ancients or even here in modernity. I believe that hybrids not only walked on this earth, but continue to do so. And, you know, so does the team I'm working with. So when we see these very odd skulls in Peru, it really caught our attention and started us on a trail.
Yeah, let's go back. I know, Les, you were on the show last year, and we got your, like, how you got into all this, and kind of your whole story and everything. But, you know, as I look at that, and I was thinking, it's like, I mean, let's get a little bit of that. But it's like, I mean, do you wake up one morning and go, you know, I think I'll be this?
You know, although, no,
when I looked at that, it's like I'm saying, I want to be that. I want to do that. You know, you kind of do.
It's so. A great question, Julia, because, yeah, all of a sudden I find myself on an airplane flying to a country I've never been to before. I don't know a single person. I don't speak the language. And I don't know these people I'm meeting completely by myself. And
I know that feeling.
Yes. And, you know, and then I find myself with my forensic kit becoming, you know, part of this team that started taking DNA samples from 2,000-year-old mummies. And then, of course, it progressed to the point where the Ministry of Culture invited our team down to do the skulls that they thought were most anomalous. And there was a point, honestly, Julia, where I'm sitting there and I'm like, wait a minute, how did this UFO investigator get to Peru on invitation of the president of the Peruvian culture to do their DNA samples? And I have a little over 300 DNA samples I've taken from the elongated skulls.
Oh, wow.
I don't know how it happens. It's absolutely crazy.
That is so cool. That, wow.
So when you were
That's
looking
when you
at
go,
the,
thank you.
Yeah. You know, and excuse me, I'm still trying to get over a flu here. But it started with, you know, these about 24 strange looking skulls. And obviously most of them are, cradle boarded, head boarded and manipulated manually. But then we started seeing a select few, and every so often you'd find this really odd skull that didn't have any of the markers and presented some of their own. And that's where we focused in on, especially when the Peruvian and Bolivian cultures, everything from Viracocha to a lot of their beliefs today is that, the gods came down in vehicles. They came from the heavens and, taught them everything they needed to know. And we're finding these elongated skulls around the most sophisticated ancient civilizations, from the Mayans to the Egyptians, down to the Peruvian culture and the Paracas. Then we learn that the Paracas people, which is on the shoreline, just probably 30 minutes south of Lima, maybe an hour and a half. It's between Lima and Cusco. But, you know, all of a sudden, nobody knows where these people came from or what happened to them. So now we have a real mystery. And some of the biggest, some of the strangest skulls, and I've got PowerPoint, I've got photos that are just remarkable to share with everybody at Ozark.
Oh, fantastic. I think I was telling you about when I was down there about some things that I saw and the stories that I was hearing. It was the same thing, like you said, the beings that came in and it's just like, I mean, it's just part of their, that's just what they know. And it took me 2 times to hear it before I got it. And I'm like, well, wait a minute. Whoa, back up. Repeat that, please. A little boy taught them everything. What?
Yeah.
A little boy in a jumpsuit, a silver jumpsuit. What?
Yeah. It's remarkable how accepting it is. And it's one of the examples of cultures, because the Chilean government also openly investigates UFOs. It shares that with their people. And it's one of the tools and examples that we're using when we're talking to the lawmakers up here in D.C. that we're facing threats every day. We hear of, you know, pandemics of not if they're going to happen, it's when. We have North Korea threatening to, you know, nuke us. We have Russian submarines pulling up to the shoreline. There's threats everywhere, the terrorism, all this. But they're afraid we can't handle extraterrestrials. And that this is too big and we can't handle it. And yet there are populations all over the world that it's so accepted. I kind of have a great story to illustrate that. Do you mind?
Yeah, not at all. It'd be great.
I'm standing on a step pyramid that's not dug out yet. It's not even on the map of, so this is absolutely raw area in the Chongos necropolis. And I'm standing on a step pyramid with the mayor of Pisco. And he's telling me about the water. When he finds out I'm a UFO investigator and I'm the only one on the team, his eyes got big and he started telling me through the interpreter about this big lake they had in back of the pyramid. And all the villagers used that for their cattle. And it was very important to his village. And he kept saying this UFO kept coming down. And it took the water. So I'm like, oh my gosh, you want me to go take samples of, you know, you could see a dry lake bed. And he's looking at me like, no, I want you to get my water back. And I realized at that point that his investigators, the police that work in Peru, they mostly serve the community. They fix problems. There's not a whole mm-hmm. lot of the arrest and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And as an investigator, he was seeing that as my role as well. So it was also a reminder how accepted the mm-hmm. UFO extraterrestrial hybrid mm-hmm. philosophy or reality is in that area. Absolutely no shame as the mayor telling me about this UFO. And it was as though he was telling me that the 7-Eleven was robbed. It was awesome.
Right. It wasn't even like, well, even it wasn't even, it would sound like it would be even less. I mean, even a robbery, you would have to prove. It'd be even something even more factual than that.
It's like,
we already know what happened and who did it. I just want my stuff back.
Exactly. And even after he said, you're here in Peru studying UFOs. And he put his hand on his hip and he says, don't you have them in the United States? He couldn't believe I came all the way down there to, you know, to do something. It was like to investigate, you know, their bicycles or something. It was, and we found that all over, including Bolivia. There's such a, it's so embedded in not only their oral history, but their written history from, you know, a lot of their, you know, even textiles. The Paracas people didn't leave a written record, but they left textiles and, you know, their pottery. Clearly, somebody was coming from the stars and helping them.
Hello?
It's amazing.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. There was something. It was something that just I saw in that museum. I was telling you about this. It was in. Oh, shoot. Cusco, I think. I think it was the Natural History Museum.
Yeah, maybe that's in Cusco.
Okay. And it was just like, it wasn't said very much. And I think I asked you about it. It was called the Ocular Being. And I have looked and looked and looked and tried to find something about it. Have you heard of that or seen anything about that?
It's elusive, isn't it? And a lot of the information down there is like that. Even with the elongated skulls, I have brand new photos of some of the skulls still on the mummies that have never been seen before in America. I'm bringing that to Ozark. And they have just remarkable antiquity and artifacts and, you know, things about the culture that's even mm-hmm. different than the Inca or, you know, they're very difficult to find. I have one photo of an archaeologist and I standing in the foundation of a home, clearly in this square, and you could see a little face of a skull sticking out. You know, they're building on this. A lot of this information is being just kind of run over and not paid attention to because of the needs of the population today. So a lot of the things that you and I, you'll see something that strikes our attention. There's no one really down there doing the work. Very little being done, which is why our team went down to do the DNA work for them. They don't have access to the clean suits or the equipment that we have. Mm-hmm. And the whole time we were taking the samples of these skulls, of course, I had to create a clean room. Wait till you see the photos. I have all this coming too. But, you know, all of this is they're bringing their families in and taking photographs and looking at us, big smile, CSI, because they don't have any of this. And it was just remarkable. Thousands of pyramids are still there's a pyramid complex right outside
really?
Of Lima that is a motorcycle track where they race motorcycles there every weekend.
Oh, my gosh.
It's so different that there's just so much information and these wonderful ancient civilizations, and there's just no one to dig or collect
the stuff.
Oh, my God.
So the pyramids are visible? I mean, I didn't see that. I was right there and I didn't see that.
Yeah, there's a lot of them, and mostly you can, yeah, they stand out if you know what you're looking at. And I'll be talking a lot about the Chongo's necropolis and mm-hmm. that step pyramid I'm standing on. It's still, we've been going back there now for 6 years and it's still absolutely unexcavated.
Can I go sometime?
Absolutely. You know, it's amazing to have a team, especially of people that can help dig, because one of the other things we discovered the last time we were there was through drones and satellite imaging, we uncovered a stone wall. We did. We found this beautiful stone wall. We can only dig down so far because we need permits, and they're very difficult to get in Peru. So just amazing. But there's an entire complex still there on the Chongos, and we were the ones that discovered it. It was crazy.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, but that's so cool. I mean, you're discovering it. That is just, that's that ancient civilization part, you know, and you're finding it. Oh, that's fascinating.
And it's one of those situations where how I got on this team and even got there in the first place, everybody was so confused how it all came together. It's still kind of crazy, but we've continued throughout, and now we kind of have our sights on Sardinia and a few other places around the world. We're looking for the hybrid race, whether it's modernity or antiquity or our ancients. We're looking for that proof. And one thing that came out of this was, I don't want to spoil the ending on what we found with the DNA.
Yeah, I don't want you to give that away.
But I will say that we changed the migration timeline in humanity. And scientifically, we have a migration that is not supposed to exist, and yet we just proved that these people or hybrids were in Paracas, Peru. And it was considered impossible, and yet there's the DNA, all from the Middle East. What? It's just, it's mind-blowing. We've got, you know, archaeologists and anthropologists, and they're just, you know, they're all over us, you know, on, you know, like, how did that, what are you talking about? This can't be. And then they look at our testing. Mm-hmm. It's foolproof. It's good to go. So it's just remarkable that what happens when you get into this field and not afraid to, you know, chase down mysteries. You know, look at the good you've done. You've been all over the world helping people and giving these classes and providing something so remarkable that collectively we're changing the world.
Yeah, it's just fascinating. It's fun, isn't it? We're all contributing.
I feel like I just got started.
Changing timelines.
Right?
Interesting.
Then we have, you know, the conference. You know, it's I love the conference. If I'm speaking or not, I'm at Ozark. I love Ozark Conference. My husband loves it too. He's coming this year, and a bunch of people, couple of like Timothy Alberino, who's one of the top researchers out here for ancient remains, is coming to Ozark just because he's heard so much about it. And yeah, so we've got a lot of kind of VIP people that won't miss this conference because of the information. So, and it's like a family, and you hear that every year, but it is like a family. There's people there that I only get to see at Ozark, and the feeling that you have there, it's such a positive environment. We can't wait. It's almost a cleansing, like you go and you get to hang out at Ozark with everybody, and you leave and you feel like, whew, okay.
Now get back to work.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I can ride on this energy for a while now. Yeah,
definitely.
Yeah, it's good. It's like you said. Yeah, it's for the information, but it's also for the camaraderie. It's all the get-togethers. The speakers come together just as much as all the attendees. You know, it's everything.
I still get a little starstruck with Linda Moutenhowl, and she's been to every Ozark. I mean, she speaks there every year, and
she said she's only missed one.
Wow, that's remarkable. So 30 years of speaking every, you know, consistently at Ozark, and she wouldn't miss it either. And I always found it funny because Linda's kind of a rock star, and there she is, every speaker sitting there with everybody, you know, the attendees and the people, you know, that came, and she's right in the middle of them, sitting with them, engaged in the conference as well. And you don't always see that. And I'm always impressed by that.
Yeah. She's great. I just think, you know, everybody is, I feel like we pick really good people. And, we don't just, the same with our books. Mom always said, we don't publish junk. we don't pick junk. We pick really good people. So we're real picky. We have high standards, I feel like.
Yeah, absolutely you do. And I'm very honored, very honored. This is my second time speaking at Ozark, and I can't wait. I just can't wait to get there. We're looking forward to it.
Can't wait to have you. we had we'll shift a little bit. We had a good time last fall. We were out. You want to talk about that a little bit?
That was a great. We had that investigation and the Arkansas Crystal Mine in Mena, Arkansas, and you joined us, and we were just thrilled to have you. And it was an honor too, because of the what you bring to the table in an investigation. It was it was not only a lot of contribution. It was a different side. I'm very scientific and black and white. There's a big population that demands dispassionate scientific proof of some of the claims, and you bring in a metaphysical and very enlightened attitude and investigation standard, which blended together. We killed it. I mean, you know, there were some things about Arkansas that I still question. I really do. I've been there a couple of times, but there were some real experiences.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was fun, especially the night experience there out in the middle of the woods.
It's so fun. I always love doing that, especially with us, because when you have your colleagues with you, it's just fun. And, you know, it doesn't matter if that little crack, you know, you hear like a twig break and everybody's like, oh, what's that? Well, 99.9%, we know it's going to be a raccoon or one of the nocturnal animals. It doesn't matter. We're having fun. Our heart's pounding. We're like, what? It's so awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we were making it everything under the sun. It was fun. It was, yeah, I don't know. There were things. I mean, who knows, you know? I mean, because I was feeling, at some points, I was feeling things. I was feeling some energies and everything, but yeah, who knows?
You know, these things are on demand. So, you know, the big lights that, you know, brought us out there to begin with, and of course, a lot of witnesses, once they experience something so extraordinary, it shocks them and changes a lot of their direction. And we find that our witnesses tend to be involved, and they're out there every night. And I kind of call it turning parachondriac, where now every bump is, you know, extraterrestrial, or every light is a UFO, but it's something they go through. It's a process, because they're so anxious to validate what they first saw or shock them. And I think that a little bit of that's going on in Arkansas. But one thing I know for sure, I know what I saw when I was with Josh Gates, and they caught it on camera. And I'm so happy for that, because no one can take that one away. And I also had another experience there. So something's going on, whether all of it is extraterrestrial or not, there is definitely some mystery there.
Yeah, there's something different happening. Like you said, something mysterious, something paranormal, something happening. And So there you go. And that's what I was going to say. When you said it's like when something happens, then they start making everything. I was going to say, is it probably hard for them to maybe get back to a normal, quote, normal life, maybe an everyday existence, you know, where they can, you know, put it into some perspective?
You almost see that our best witnesses are the ones that just, when you see something that's not supposed to exist, and it's so profound that they're out hunting for that sighting again, or that next experience, almost nightly. It's they're our most passionate witnesses. I mean, they, for a variety of reasons, still do this, but none of it for hoaxing, none of it for, you know, dishonest reasons. They want to validate. They want to see it again. Mm-hmm. They're trying to answer questions. And I think sometimes we're a little hard on some of our witnesses when they become obsessed, like mm-hmm. this investigator mm-hmm. that does this full time. And mm-hmm. I think we're hard on the witnesses sometimes when they may cross a line on, you know, what I call that parachondriac reaction to everything. Experience also tells us that they come back, you know, they realize after a while that, okay, but it's a process. And, you know, I tend to think we're not very good to our witnesses anyway as a community. When we think of like Travis Walton, one of the most mm-hmm. extraordinary experiences that how you can not believe this man with everything he's gone through, lie detector tests, all that. But think of what we put him through. Mm-hmm. The man was missing.
Right.
And people just demanded him to prove. And yeah, it's just, so there's a sympathy or, you know, an empathy I have with our witnesses that, you know, I let them know it's okay to not, you know, have to tell the world. Or it's okay to say, you know what? I'm not jumping through your hoops.
Right.
You know, I know what I saw.
I think what you're dealing with on the other people, when they're, you have to prove it, you're dealing with their stuff, you know, their insecurities, their issues with, if that is real, then my whole world, you know, is you're pulling the rug out from under my feet, and that's their issues. And you know, that's why they're doing that. So
you're absolutely right. And it's hard when the witnesses are also, you know, we were talking about how they speak to us in Peru about this very openly. Mm-hmm. I never heard what we hear almost every time, which is, well, I want to tell you about this UFO, but you're going to think I'm crazy.
Yeah.
That's always what we hear. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of that is, you know, people would, especially when you're telling the truth, would like to be believed by friends and family. And that's not always what happens. In fact, a lot of our witnesses lose, close relationships and friends walk away. And, you know, so I just really think as a community, we need to be better at that kind of support and not so hard on the witnesses, even if they're a little flawed.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, they've gone through something, and it's no different than anything, you know, anybody going through something, you know,
right.
We want to be supportive. So whether you believe them or not, it's support.
That's right. Right. Do, so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Something just popped in my head that came up when I talked with Forrest, okay? And it's what got Forrest into all of this. And so it's reminding me of that, and it's part of the conversation that came up. So I guess it's what's tickling me back there as far as why, you know, we talked about why you got into this. I mean, but we came around from this other angle as to why you got into this. But what maybe is at the very core of why you got into all of this?
You know, I don't really, I suspect that there's other things. I can tell you that there was an experience with my youngest son that I don't ever talk about because he's not ready. And because, you know, I'm so visible out here and most people know who my son is, out of respect, until he's ready to talk about some things, I really have kept this very close to my vest. That has some to do with it. My every core, everything in my body, my gut, my heart, my soul, my mind knows this is real. But I don't know exactly what that passion is and why this and not another cause or another mystery, why I always stay so focused here. I have some that tell me that, there's a lot more that goes on with me that I'm just not ready to know about. And I hear that from almost everybody. And I'm okay with that. One of those people that feel like if I don't remember, I'm not supposed to. But I'm so determined to investigate or do right by people that have seen something so extraordinary because they have nowhere else to go. Nowhere. They can't call the police. The FBI's not going to help them. If we're not putting our best efforts and helping them and in that support after and in that, it's a process that every person has and we're better in the end. We're better people in society. We're more empathetic. There's, you know, the vibration of we expect bigger and better of ourselves. So I just think it's a good place to be. It's frustrating. As if you're looking for a destination or if you're looking for that golden ring or to be famous, it's going to be frustrating. But for me, every day is a challenge and a treat because the journey is my destination. Every day. I love this. I don't know why, but completely, I've even tried to like walk away and take a break. Nope. It pulls me right back in for many reasons. But, yeah, it's in my core. And I'll also share something with you that my mom used to laugh at me. But growing up, I used to say, especially when the moon was really big, I used to tell her I felt sorry for the moon because it's all alone, because there's supposed to be two of them. And there's a part of me that I know – like 150% that I'm not really like I'm here temporarily. This is not my home. And I felt that way ever since I can remember. I feel that way to this day. And even my husband giggles because I'll still look at that moon every once in a while and say, gosh, it's kind of sad. You know, the moon makes me a little sad because there's supposed to be two of them. What is that?
Have you read Three Waves of Volunteers?
Yeah.
By Dolores Cannon.
I have not read that one yet. Oh, no. Oh, boy. You know what? I need to get that when I'm in Ozark. Remind me for sure.
I will.
But it's a very, it's a feeling I've always had. And I believe that has something to do with it, too. And, it may even be why I'm really focused in on the DNA and where we come from and why do we think we belong here. I mean, there's things, honestly, Julia, that I just get aggravated with, like that Darwinian theory. And I'm, you know, you're at the National Museum over here and I'm thinking, who's the stoonod that thought this was a good idea? There's a missing friggin' link. It's not even a good scientific solid theory. Why is this our thought process and the standard of science? And I'm so aggravated with that because to me, why would we shed our monkey fur to have to kill animals to put it back on because we're freezing? That's not evolution. You know, why does our skin continue to burn when we're outside on our own planet? Maybe because we're not from here. Exactly. It's, you know, so all these things, and I'm sure I'm the odd one walking through the museum, but I can barely stomach the, you know, evolution room or the cavemen. And it's like, well, yeah, they were here, but put a Homo sapiens sapien next to them, and now you've got the real picture. You know, it's just, it's odd. So maybe it's that, maybe it does come down to the core, Julia, that I've just never really felt like like I'm from here, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I get it. I get it. This is wonderful. We're having a great time. This is part two of our wonderful show with Chase Klutzke. And thank you for this. Is so
technology hates me, Julia. It just hates me.
Well, how about we change that reality?
Yeah.
Can we do that? How about it's just not changing frequencies at the same speed, you know, and we're all moving and bumping into each other and all these, you know, we're all changing frequencies and we're all doing crazy things. And so we just need, that's what, you know, hey, that's what this was about. I was doing some, you know.
Right, absolutely. Or it could be that I look out my living room window into the office building of Booz Allen, which is NSA. I mean, that could be.
So do you have some disruptive energies around you, maybe?
Oh, yeah. This is DC, and oh, boy. Yes.
Oh, girl. Yeah, that's what I was noticing whenever I saw the caller ID, when I called you back, I was like, Washington, D.C. Oh, okay.
Oh, you? Yeah. Did you know I moved?
No, I don't know that I ever knew. I don't pay attention to details like that.
It's so crazy. In fact, it was when I left you guys in Arkansas and flew home, and my husband picked me up at the airport and told me he had an opportunity, and it was so awesome. I'm like, oh, well, we have to take it. He says, awesome, but we have to move to D.C., and we have to be there in 6 weeks.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. So that's what we did, and we moved here in December. But, yeah, it was right, you know, the plane leaves on the way home. So, yeah, it's been crazy ever since. You're looking at my tiny little apartment, which is cute, but it's so tiny. But this is D.C.
Okay, so, yeah. So how's it been since you've been there?
It's so different, Julia. And, you know, being Southeast Georgia, you know, everything's laid back. You know, we live in shorts and bare feet and flip-flops or, you know, dress shoes. And, you know, we move up here and I have to master the metro and we walk everywhere. And there are some beautiful suburbs around D.C., but I decided if we're going to do this, Pete and I have always done that. We've always done the beautiful little communities and little cul-de-sacs. And I'm like, I want to be in the heart and soul. I want to be as close to the capital as possible. And that's what we've done. Uh-huh. So we did find a great apartment. We're on the 9th floor, which all of this is so strange to me to just, yeah, we walk everywhere. There's not a McDonald's, you know, within 15 miles or, you know, a Walmart. You know, it's just totally different.
You're not in the
totally
South.
Different way of living. Yeah. And everybody moves really fast. So I do well in D.C. Kind of taking corners on two wheels. Everybody's doing it. So I don't feel so, you know, crazy all the time, for sure. Mm-hmm. And I still have that kind
you feel crazy in a different way, maybe.
Yeah, a little bit. It's very, very fast paced. I mean, you definitely have to take a break from this place every once in a while. It's very political. You have to be at the right restaurants, and you should shop at the right stores, and you only drink certain drinks. We don't know any of those rules, so we're having fun because we could just be tourists, And yeah, it's just been fun. I enjoy taking the metro. It's silly as that sounds. It's so different. It's a different way to travel, and you're with a bunch of strangers, going down the train tracks, and ended up somewhere. But there's also a couple dangers, that like there's some things that you have to be really careful about in DC as well. But so far, it's still the adventure to us. So probably have to ask me in about a year. What do you think of DC in about a year?
Okay.
The Capitol is just a few blocks up the road, and it's been cold and snowy and kind of rainy, miserable weather. But when I first got here and the first can't wait, like you just jet out. We're at the Aerospace Museum all the time. Pete and I went there and just watched a couple movies. And awesome. Actually, they were in the observatory, but the museums are all right here. I love going to the Capitol and just walking around. You see all these rallies, and you'll see the senators out there. Nancy Pelosi's got her little group, and they've got another senator with a press conference, and just learning your way around. It's an amazing place.
You're right in the middle of everything.
Yeah.
That would be a completely different way of life.
Yeah. I mean, even the sirens at night, like when I looked at the apartment, I didn't think about things like what's around me that would make noise. I mean, we've always not lived like this. And oh my gosh, Julia, like the sirens all night long, and and we're just looking at each other, we just giggle. It's like, yep, we're in the city now. Crazy, crazy.
Oh my goodness. Okay, so where we left off, we were talking about and you were in the museum, and you were so aggravated with the stories that they would tell. Let's see. Oh yeah, they're Oh, the missing link stories. We were on that. Okay.
Yeah, and I think it's because we're lied to and about where we come from and who we are, and anything against the scientific paradigm of the Darwinian theory or evolution or anything that pushes against that, or a biblical narrative. And there's a lot of pushback, and we're in trouble, but I don't think we know much, honestly, about where we come from. So I'm always intrigued to dig in a little deeper on that topic.
Right. I was thinking about that, like when I was in that museum, and it was like the week before I was in. I was telling you about this too, because it was like I had these two series of events, and that's when my brain was kind of going, "Oh my gosh, there's something happening here." I was in the there was a tar pit in California. It was like these two completely unrelated things, but they were connected, and because they had the same exhibit, and it was just like, "What? How would that happen?" That's so weird. But their exhibit that they had was showing, it was like how things started. It was just kind of like that it was all that it was like it started with that one land mass and the Pangaea, and it was how and then that like in the tar pits was that the one animal and everything. But then it was talking about the how the one land mass, and then it gradually everything starts splitting apart, and just trying to show, okay, that's where everything how it all began. And there was just something about that display that just made it, was like it gets this start, it makes it start ticking. And it's like, yeah, things aren't like what they say, you know. And yeah, and that was just when I saw it in the one place. And then when I got here, I am someplace completely different. They have the very same display. And then, you know, and then I'm talking to this tour guide, and he's telling me the story with the, you know, the little boy who comes and teaches them all this stuff. And then I get messages and stuff. And anyway, that's another story, but we'll, but I'm, it's like, what, you know, there's so much, you know, and like there, I mean, you had these, and they're like, well, we'll go on. Like, right there, you have, let alone, you have all these pyramids and everything, and then right next to that, you have all these megalithic stones that are, you know, there's stuff going on there. I mean, where's all this stuff from?
Yeah, it is remarkable, and it's really hard to stand at Pumapunku and accept that, you know, they did this, humans did this with chicken bones and copper tools. And there's just, it's a ridiculous, ridiculous a statement to even make, or a storyline. It's very interesting. And I just, I like asking the tough questions. I like thinking out of the box and not feeling like I have to walk that line with everyone else. And I think what we do and the things we learn and the people we communicate with really, really help keep us always searching. And it doesn't matter how far I search, Julia, I always, we're in the end, we're still looking up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. it was funny. Everybody in, I think everybody in our group was, there wasn't anybody outside that was in our group. We were all the same kind. I mean, we all believed the same. But the guide didn't know who we were, okay? And he was going through what he had to say. And he was doing the same things. This is the megalithic stones and everything. And he was doing his rote things. And he's trying to do the things of the same thing they do with the pyramids, of how they built them, and they had, like you're saying, the farmers, you know, they had the, you know, the logs, and they're doing it, they're bringing them up the hills, and it's like, how? You know, really? And one guy, I mean, you know, I'm just, you know, usually we're just like, you know, he has to say it. One guy just finally, he just, you don't really believe that, do you? And the guy just said, well, I have to, you know, they require me to say this.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And then when we were standing in Pumapunku, which is in Bolivia, and it's high in the Andes. And, you know, they were giving us that same story. And, you know, and I kind of looked around and I'm like, well, where did you get the trees? Because we're so high up, trees aren't growing there. And so I'm like, well, where did they get those logs? And he kind of looked at me and he giggled and he says, oh, smarty pants or something. It was really funny. But yeah, he just finished, you know, the standard line. And but I thought that was funny when they talked about the logs, and I'm looking, I'm like, I don't see any trees.
Good point.
It was crazy. I'm thinking, don't tell me you're, you know, bringing them down the river, because again, it's not down anything. It's everything's up. Mm-hmm. Why would they choose such a difficult area?
Yeah.
It's just, and then the galley with all the faces, and there's clearly the face of a gray. I mean, there's no mistaking that's exactly what they meant, because of the detail and everything else you see. You know, in the Gateway of the Sun with Viracocha and all the little minions, and they're perfect. Obviously, they didn't slip with their chicken bone.
No, I don't think so.
So crazy. But yeah, and I think when people can, you know, get out or travel like that, or you know, just go to a alleged UFO site, you know, and just imagine to just get out there and enjoy what we do and what we believe.
Yeah, but ask your own questions. Like you say, just do your own investigation. Just check it out and ask common sense questions.
Right.
Because what they say doesn't make sense. Just...
It's going to be interesting. You know, it seems like every year when we're at Ozark and the conference is going on, I don't know if it's the collective energy or something, but there's typically experiences that happen.
Yes.
That we hear about. And I'm really, really coming in this year with that open, okay, I'm in, guys. Not expecting anything specific, but I just have this feeling that there's going to be some significance, whether it's information or something, but I really cannot wait to get there this year. It's going to be amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. They're always saying, you know, it's just a matter of allowing, just be open and allow, and whatever it is, you know, you will get what you are ready for.
Exactly. Or, you know, I think even counting on the information, and it's not necessarily going to come from a Dolan or a Linda, even though I love them dearly. You know, it could come from, you know, one statement from, you know, when we're at the banquet, the guy sitting at the next table that I overhear. So I'm really wanting to be that open and just... Mm-hmm. I'm going to wait for it.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, that's a really good point, because it can come from anywhere. So, yeah.
That you can't dismiss anything at all. And I love that. I love surprises. You know, I'm old and grumpy, so anytime I could still have these great surprises, I always look forward to that.
Yeah. Oh, and you mentioned the banquet. So, and that's, we'll say that again, we do have the speaker dinner, and that's always so much fun, because we have the speakers out there, and you get to mingle with everybody. What's that like from your perspective?
It's wonderful. You know, the last time I was a speaker at the banquet, we sit with different tables. The speakers don't sit together. We sit with the attendees, which I love that. And there is a group of ladies that I met at my table that I'm still friends with, and we are all over each other on Facebook. And they were kind of shy, and they just kind of didn't expect it. And we just hit it off and got along, and you know, they were different, which was awesome.
Fantastic. Yeah, and that's what we want. We ask for everybody to sit, we ask all the speakers to sit at different tables so everybody can get to know them. And yeah.
And really, yeah, to this day, we're all still good friends. And I think they're coming this year. And they had even asked, you think we can all group up at a table? And I'm like, no, I think we have to share the love, share the love.
Yeah, share your chase.
Yeah, share them too. They're just amazing women, very strong, very different from one of them. We couldn't be more opposite in our politics and our thinking and our lifestyle, and we just adore each other. And that's my favorite part, is, you know, just getting to meet extraordinary people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And that is what it's about. And you know what I noticed last year, it's like each year, and especially last year, it's more and more people who have never been there before are coming, so more new people. And it's like, wow. And they said, this is the first time I've ever been here. I never knew about you.
Last year, I remember being surprised how many first timers had their hand up. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people were remarking on, we've never seen that many brand new, because there were a lot, like hundreds.
Yes.
And
it was like half, I want to say half at least. Mm-hmm.
And that was true in the end? Wow. It felt that way, but they were ready. They were interested. They were shopping.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. See a lot of bags. I was like, wow, they're like, that vendors must be happy. Woo.
Yeah. I don't think I've mentioned that before. We do have a whole downstairs. Yeah, they're not downstairs. They're vendors, all kinds of vendors. And that's, you know, you can go in there free, and then they have all kinds of things from, oh my goodness, readers to crystals to UFO paraphernalia, I guess that would be what you call it, gadgets and gadgets, and to books, and to, I mean, everything you can imagine is down there. So
yeah, I was surprised. Some of the most beautiful arts and crafts that incorporate UFOs and aliens, and not just the cute stuff. I mean, elegant work of, oh my gosh. I'm banned from there. My husband doesn't let me go down there by myself. I'm grounded from the vendor's room, but
you're grounded.
It is,
or you're
nice.
Grounded.
Oh no, I'm grounded, like punished. I'm in a like timeout chair for even thinking about going down to that vendor's room, the way I could spend money down there. But you know, but the vendor's room and the outside activities are open and free. And I was just curious how many people, you know, just kind of hear about it in town, and they come by and they just walk around and end up staying and buying a ticket. Because we saw a couple of them going up to, and I'm like, wow, that's friggin' awesome. You know, they just kind of came out of curiosity, got hooked down in the vendor's room, walked around the free area, and then decided, you know what, this is awesome, we're staying, let me get a ticket. That was cool.
Absolutely. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if I ever heard the numbers, but there were quite a few doing that. Yes.
That's so cool. I love that. New people are amazing, because they just come out blown away. You know, Linda, her talks are like watching a documentary movie. They're just flawless, brilliant, A to Z. You know, she's just amazing. And you see their eyes are like saucers. I love that. Love that.
Well, and like you said, all of ours, I mean, everybody's just so well put together. So, I mean, they know what they're doing. I think it's a passion. I really do. I think it's a passion. Yeah.
It's going to be exciting this year. So, can't wait. What's it, a week and a half?
Me either. Goodness. Well, let's tell everybody how they can reach you if they want to find you. They have any questions or want to talk to you?
Absolutely. I'm on Facebook, but I'm not really doing a lot of Facebook lately. Like, I kind of go in just to say hi to my friends and stuff, but I don't stay on long enough to like everybody. It's annoying. I do a lot of Twitter, and I'm still old-fashioned. Email is great. You know, and email is easy. That's my name at yahoo.com.
Me too.
I love the Facebook, and when I have time, I have a great time on it and really get to interact with my friends. It's like once every 6 months. So Facebook isn't the best way to get, or the fastest way to get a hold of me. Mm-hmm. But if you send me something, I will absolutely answer back. Yeah.
Okay. And then your website, let's see, I think it's the same, isn't it? It's your name. Yeah. ChaseKletzky.com. Yeah.
Yeah. With a name like that, I pretty much have, everything's open to me. I don't have to like add too much to them. They're the Kletzkys are, yeah, it's a different name.
Right. Yeah. And then we have, the spelling on the site here and everything. So if you, just look it up, it's that odd spelling, but once you have it, you have it.
Exactly. You know, and people can find me at MUFON too. I've just recently accepted a new position, which is the Director of Investigations now. So,
congratulations.
Thank you. I love that. Steve Hudgens, who was the DOI before me, got another great job offer. So, you know, we still get to work very closely together, which I love. But yeah, so I'm excited about that. There's a lot of great things going on this year, and I, you know, just can't wait. And one of them, 100%, is Ozark. So I just, it's a great year this year.
Yeah. You know, and like you said, you know, you feel like something's going to happen. I feel like this year, that's how it feels. Stuff is happening. So there's stuff about this year.
Yeah. And we already see that a little. I mean, who saw the government admitting ATIP and that, the you know, they had a UFO investigating group in the military? Who saw that one coming in breaking news? Mm-hmm. And then, you know, the pilots that are talking about very openly over the sighting in Arizona, even though that was in February. But there was two more breaking stories today from legitimate sources. And, you know, I'm not sure disclosure is going to be a news conference. I think it's going to be confirmation where, you know, or we're just folded into that reality and we're all good. We don't need you guys to make your statements. We got
exactly.
it.
It's okay. Yeah. And, you know, yeah, exactly. They don't have to do that. It's okay. Because, you know, Forrest and I were talking about, and he said, they can't do that really, you know, because that's counterproductive for their role. So this is really a better way for them to do it, for it to come out. It's just to look at it like this. So, and yeah, that's fine.
I think it's, yeah. And we're all feeling that way, Julia. So it's, you know, we'll be excited to see what turns out. That's for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. And like, and see, and then I guess they're testing the waters to see how it's handled, and we're fine.
Yeah. Yeah. There's been no catastrophe or even backlash. Everybody's kind of like, oh, interesting.
And they're not panicking and running out in the streets and freaking out. Or I don't know about it if they are, anyway.
No. Right, exactly.
It's yeah, but silly. I live in my little bubble, and I don't watch news, and I don't know anything. I don't live in Washington, D.C., so I don't know anything. So.
It's hard to keep up with the information flow. I mean, this is, it's like breaking. There is something constantly being announced or moving in D.C., and I could see where in 5 or 6 years I'll be ready for my little place in Georgia. But for now, man, I'm friggin' loving this.
You got your finger on the pulse, you're in the fast lane. And
yeah, it's crazy.
Wow. Well, I can see how it's beneficial right now for you.
Yeah, definitely. I'm knocking on doors and trying to, you know, get in there. And of course, I'm not going in wanting disclosure. I'm going in wanting to talk to them about, you know, certain documents that we need. And you have to know how DC works. So when I first got here, there were certain offices I tried to, you know, get appointments with. And I would with their junior staff or mid-level staffers. But then you find out, well, you guys really can't help me much, or like, well, what am I doing here? What are you guys going to do? Until you figure out how DC works, and then you realize who's who and what do they care about. And when you have lawmakers up here, like Rand Paul, that's a libertarian that cares, you know, that is so offended by overspending, and, you know, you kind of see opportunities, Julia, and this sounds bad, but, you know, to kind of knock on his door to give him a call and say, you know, that ATIP program that the government funded for $22 million out of the Department of Defense budget, that program has, we find no evidence it's gone away. So What? How much are they spending on that now? Could you help me find those documents on how much they're spending? Because he's livid. Like, oh my God, nobody told us that $22 million. So sometimes you kind of got to maneuver DC the way it really works.
Sure.
A Rand Paul is probably going to give us more information than the Office of Science and Technology. But that's how it works in DC. Isn't that nutty?
Yeah. Well, you know, there you go.
It's maneuvering. Funny. Corners on two wheels.
Mm-hmm. Doing the dance. My goodness. Okay. Well, I see you doing that little. Well, if anybody can do it, you can. That's for sure.
That's so fun. Thank you. Thank you.
Oh, well, thank you, Chase, for being with me here tonight. It's been wonderful.
Yes, I was looking forward to talking with you and seeing you. It makes it better. Best thing about it, I'm going to see you in a week and a half.
No, it's coming up so fast. Gosh, it's going to be fantastic. Well, a big, great big hug.
Great big one back. And thank you so much for having me. And, looking forward to it. Great production team, by the way. We kept him busy.
My goodness, yes. He did it, though.
He's a pro.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, well, love you, everybody, and love you, Chase, and thank you again, and good night, everyone. We'll see you next week, or if I don't, we'll see you at the conference. Please come and enjoy, and come see Chase, and you can speak to her in person. Come have dinner
with
her.
Awesome. Yeah. Bye, girl.